Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 26th, 2015. I'm happy to be joined by my co-host, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great, great. Well, you're coming through loud and clear, and I can certainly hear my own voice, but there's been a metaphorical, metaphysical gag rule imposed on some people in talking about climate in the past couple of weeks, huh? Can you tell me what the story is there?
Yes, it's the sounds of silence. There was a controversy that emerged in mid March involving a fellow by the name of Bart Bibler, who's a state land management plan coordinator for the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. Apparently, he was in a meeting where he discussed the issue of climate change. He said the thing that should not be said, and according to at least one report, discussion touched upon the issue involving the Keystone XL pipeline, which he suggested should not be constructed because the emissions from the pipeline would essentially sink Florida, which everybody knows would in fact happen. So his supervisor got really ticked off at him, and according to one report, suspended him for 2 days and then basically said that he could not return to work unless he underwent a psychiatric evaluation. So in other words, if you discuss the climate crisis, you're basically considered crazy.
Isn't that what Stalin did?
Yes.
Ship people off of psychiatric evaluations.
But and of course, just as the governor of Florida, Rick Scott, has denied having this policy, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, a communications director by the name of Lauren Engel, told MSNBC on March the 24th that they essentially denied that that's what they had done and claimed that he was simply being, you know, somehow rude and disrespectful and argumentative. But in fact, it's one of those non-denial denials in which it becomes pretty much obvious what happened, that he was basically told to shut up and sit down and undergo a psychiatric evaluation because he dared to tell the truth, basically.
But this is part of a larger story where the state of Florida has basically banned the use of the words climate change and sea level rise, right? And so, that's all of a packet. And then I saw a clip on TV where a Florida state senator was taking testimony from a state official who could not say the word climate change. And so the senator kept giving him opportunities and saying, you know, what issue are you talking about, referring to climate change? And the guy couldn't say it. And they kept saying that issue you mentioned before. And so I guess the idea that the words climate change should be something like the word Voldemort, that no one in Florida can say these things, that is not a good deal, but it's not an isolated incident. I mean, there are other cases in other states, I'm told, that have sort of a ban on talking about climate change, but you also have... I saw an article that said it talked about the Smithsonian and that the Koch brothers have donated a huge amount of money to the Smithsonian. This is the American Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. The Koch brothers funded an exhibit, which has actually been up for quite a while, that misrepresents climate change. And that as you go through the exhibit, when you come out of the exhibit, you basically are left with the impression that human beings have encountered climate change before. We encountered it 10,000 years ago. It helped us evolve, and we're better off for it. And there's no mention of the current climate crisis. And a guy named Joe Rome at Think Progress was quite exercised about it. Did you, DR, did you see that article?
Yes, and it was actually, in fact, Joe Roman Lee Fong, who was then of thinkprogress.org, and I think he's now with The Nation, did an expose of this exhibit that was at the Smithsonian that David Koch funded, and basically pointed out all the flaws in the exhibit and its suggestion that, you know, again, that climate change is somehow no big deal, and this controversy has once again popped up, and earlier this week, a number of climate scientists and environmental groups sent a letter to the Smithsonian and to other museums, and it was basically an open letter urging them to wash their hands of David Koch and wash their hands of fossil fuel involvement and to divest from whatever holdings they may have in fossil fuel corporations, because, as one of the co-signers of the letter noted in an appearance on Democracy Now on March the 26th, you know, you cannot have science museums getting in bed with anti-science people. Right. It's a contradiction in terms, and it defeats the mission. So therefore, you know, it is, these organizations, these
need to step away from the Koch brothers.
They have a moral obligation to wash their hands of association with polluters.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, this whole issue with the Smithsonian, I think, is a weird one, because the Smithsonian has tolerated, this guy named Willie Soon that we spoke about before. I mean, a well-known climate denier, leader of the pack, taking money from fossil fuels, claiming the honor of being with the Harvard Smithsonian, and they never got on the guy's case. And then it turns out they've also taken money from the Koch brothers to put up what amounts to a somewhat deceptive science exhibit. So. Mm-hmm. So there's another way people are being, the discussion of climate is being gagged by the powers that be. Mm-hmm. But tell me, DR, there's also an opposite side to this whole topic. It's not just climate hawks are not just being gagged. They're also speaking out in other venues, right? Tell me, I heard about a letter. Well, let's see. Speaking of speaking out, Mitch McConnell, the head of the U.S. Senate, sent a letter to all 50 governors, essentially urging them to ignore the federal government, which I thought we had that battle in 1865 about ignoring the federal government, but Mitch McConnell sent a letter to the state saying to ignore the federal government's EPA regulations on coal because it was an overreach and not, they shouldn't accept those mandates from the federal government. So tell me, DR, what did one of the governors at least do in response to that?
Yes, it was Governor Bruce Shumlin Peter Shumlin, who's the governor of Vermont, who sent a letter back to Senator Mitch McConnell in which he stated, quote, climate change is real, it's a threat to humanity, and we should be working harder to address it, not rolling back efforts to do so, and I fully support the EPA's Clean Power Plan. And, you know, hopefully there'll be some more letters of this sort coming from some of the governors who are on the front lines of this issue, because, to see this sort of effort of, I guess, you know, essentially what was in the days of desegregation called massive resistance, you know, getting the states to basically refuse to comply with federal court orders. To see history repeat itself in this fashion is creepy from a certain perspective.
I guess I hadn't even realized that. I mean, you're saying that during the civil rights era, there was a sort of a similar effort to coordinate state level, nullification, if you will, right, of federal rules by just collaborating together, and now it's been resurrected.
Yes, massive resistance. It was a strategy that was developed by, among others, then Senator Harry Byrd of Virginia to basically essentially organize political fingers in Virginia and later extended to other states to basically refuse to comply with the federal court order, this U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Brown versus Board of Education to desegregate schools. And during that era, a lot of schools in the South basically dragged their feet and refused to integrate. You had private academies set up to basically circumvent desegregation laws. And basically the whole strategy was to essentially say, you know, hell no, we will not comply with orders from the federal government to integrate. And now it appears that this strategy is being resurrected to basically urge states to say, hell no, we will not comply with orders, with requirements you know, Supreme
make the
Court upheld
plans.
requirements to from the EPA, basically, to see history repeat itself in this creepy fashion. On the you know, on the year of the 50th anniversary of Selma, you know, after all this talk about the parallels between the climate movement and the civil rights movement and the common cause, to see anti-desegregation tactics being resurrected to essentially maintain the privilege of polluters is really, really sad and heartbreaking.
Well, I think that the yeah, I mean it's something that everyone listening to this podcast, climate hawks across the country, and especially those climate hawks here in Massachusetts, is to write your favorite governor and demand that he also send a letter to Mitch McConnell pointing out the fallacy of Mitch McConnell's theory. Right, to write back and say that, much like the governor of Vermont saying this is an important thing to that we have to deal with and not run away from. So there's your homework lesson for the week there, Ms. Listener.
And there's also another heartbreaking angle to this. When I mentioned the parallels between the massive resistance movement, you know, people forget that you know, Senator McConnell in his early political career, he was actually a strong supporter of civil rights at a time when it was not an easy thing for a Southern politician to do. So to see, you know, history flipped upon its head and the adoption of a massive resistance strategy, it's I mean, I don't think there are words in the English language to describe this sort of strategy, but you know, it's good to see Governor Shumlin basically say, you know, this is the wrong idea. And I would suggest that a lot of other governors will also say, hey, you know, we agree with the EPA's Clean Power Plan, and in fact, it probably needs to go further.
Well, speaking of governors, gag rules, and all this stuff, is a very interesting turn of events that's happened recently, because FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Administration, those people that help out after a hurricane and that kind of stuff, they have recently put up new regulations for the states. So the states have to provide to FEMA a recovery plan. I mean, how they're going to deal with catastrophic events. And FEMA has included in that requirement that for the next 5-year plan, which will be coming in 2016, 2017, in that new plan, FEMA has required that the states explicitly address climate change as a source of risk for that FEMA is going to have to come up with, and they're going to have to, the states have to talk about adaptation, how they're going to deal with their risk. And of course, that has sent puts many Republican governors in a bind, because if they, I don't want to, I mean, many conservative governors in a bind, right? Because they have to now address the climate issue without actually speaking about it, right? And I saw somewhere where Bobby Jindal, who is from Louisiana, which of course is not at all threatened by climate change, he was on his high horse about, you know, what an overreach the federal government has done by requiring the states to think about climate change in their disaster planning. Did you see any of that, Dion?
And I thought to myself how heartbreaking it is that we're just a few months from the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, and yet the governor of a state that was almost wiped out thoroughly by Hurricane Katrina is basically suggesting that, you know, it's nothing more than, as he put it, quote unquote, left wing ideology to essentially make plans to deal with a coming climate disaster. And it's not just Governor Jindal. A number of personalities on Fox have also been complaining about this FEMA requirement and just sort of playing to a sort of paranoid desire out of in a certain segment, if not a large segment of their audience. And it's like, you know, this policy is basic common sense that, you know, you have to prepare for future disasters that you have to know are coming. And there's nothing from a rational perspective or an objective perspective to be controversial about this. But yet, in the name of, I guess, again, you know, crusading against an alleged a perceived to be overreaching federal government, even though it's not overreaching, you have this sort of, in my view, irresponsible rhetoric.
But there, so on the other hand, there are other examples of climate hawks speaking out. So our theme for the evening is, you know, gag rules, but people going around those gag rules. And there's a couple of interesting ones. People may remember a couple of weeks ago we talked about the Guardian newspaper. Now, the Guardian is of course is a newspaper. It's a journalism enterprise, but it has taken up a climate almost a climate advocacy role, and they started a petition to ask, I think it was Bill Gates and another big a big institution to divest of their fossil fuels, right, DR?
That's correct. They asked the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Wellcome Trust of the Guardian asked both of these major charitable organizations to divest of their fossil fuel holdings. And this petition by the Guardian, it was the Guardian in conjunction with 350.org, has received over 100,000 signatures in just a few days. Signatures from such luminaries as the Oscar-winning actress Tilda Swinton, and also the activist Bianca Jagger, and from all across the spectrum, people saying that these companies that talks that these I'm sorry these organizations that talk so much about the need to help the poor and the need to remedy damage, they've got to divest from the organizations that are causing so much damage to the poor
It'd
and to
be
the rest of
fascinating to
that.
see if the Bill and Melinda Gates Fund have to divest their fossil fuel holdings. That would be quite. But anyway, people.
And the Guardian and the Guardian and we should note that the Guardian noted that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has more than $1.4 billion invested in fossil fuel companies, according
Right.
to their 2013 tax filings, which is just a staggering amount of money causing a staggering amount of pain.
Really? Wow. Well, people can find that petition online. I know it's posted on the MCAN Facebook site. I'll try and put it into the blog associated with this podcast. So you can go there. You can sign it yourself and be one of the illustrious Oscar-winning people that have signed that podcast, right? So
Excellent,
then
excellent.
the other place that people are speaking out, and this is an interesting. I mean, there's so many aspects of this kind of topic. We probably don't even have time to get into the concept of corporate media basically ignoring the question of climate change. But there is this other organization called WikiLeaks, which you probably heard about, right? Which is Assange, right? I forget his first
Yes,
name.
Julian Assange.
Julian Assange, where they put up information that is no one else wants to touch. So tell me, DR, what bombshell did they drop recently?
Yes, it was revealed earlier this week that that WikiLeaks discovered essentially the smoking gun evidence that if the Trans-Pacific Partnership is enacted, it will allow special interests to challenge laws in countries under the supervision of the TPP that would affect the profit that would supposedly affect the profitability of these special interests, which means in theory, and you've raised this example, if for example the United States passed a price on carbon, theoretically ExxonMobil would have the power under the TPP to basically legally challenge such a law, or if any other country passed a carbon tax, ExxonMobil could legally challenge such a law and basically get rid of it because it was perceived to be a threat to their profits. And WikiLeaks did a great job in exposing this, and now this has generated a lot of controversy and a lot of heat against those who are supporting the TPP. And people are basically saying that when you have various elected officials who were elected on promises to bring change and reform, supporting something that would block and restrict and essentially forbid change and forbid needed reforms, basically those elected officials might want to reconsider their gung-ho support for the TPP.
And just to remind everybody, the TPP is an acronym for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a trade deal between the United States and many countries on the Pacific Rim. The Obama administration is pushing it. In fact, they want to be able to negotiate it in secret, which is why the WikiLeaks thing comes out and is of interest. And of course, the nightmare scenario for climate hawks is that somehow the fossil fuel industry gets a hammer to come after the kinds of regulations that we know need to be instituted, regulations that would control carbon emissions, which of course are going to hurt the fossil fuel industry almost by definition. And the TPP gives the fossil fuel industry a weapon to strike back, right? It's sort of literally the Empire, who's the Emperor in the Star Wars trilogy?
The
I mean,
Emperor's Darth Vader.
No, Palpatine, wasn't it?
Palpatine,
Palpatine.
rather.
Okay, they anyway,
I
not
haven't
to
seen it in
go
years.
that
But
direction.
the point I was going to make is that Climate Hawk should also emphasize the point that if the TPP is enacted, does that not in effect sabotage the Paris talks later this year? Because if you try to work out a global deal, in theory, could not that global deal be sabotaged by the TPP, or at least critical elements thereof? So people should really ask President Obama and others who support this. You can have the TPP or you can have a deal in Paris, but you cannot logically have both.
We got to leave it there, DR. Let me tell our listeners that they can check out the links to most of what we discussed here at our blog. It says massclimateaction.wordpress.com. That's how you can find it. You can leave a comment there, or you can send us a letter to comment@massclimateaction.net. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear what topics you want to hear about. And we'd especially love to hear what exotic country or state that you live in. Of course, you can find MCAN, you can find us on the Facebook page. It's slash Mass Climate Action. You can find the show there. You can like us and share us and let your friends learn about us. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. We pop right up. If you subscribe there, it helps our visibility. More people get to learn about the show. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And thanks to all of you for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
For being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.